From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, December the 15th, 2023. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And since it is Hawaiian Shirt Friday, let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Come on. It's the only way to start a weekend, you know. Yes, indeed. Let's get things started off properly with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says, I am on a 30-day diet. So far, I've lost 15 days.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big deal.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Yeah.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
So be it. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1903, Italian-American food cart vendor Italo Marchionne received a U.S. patent for inventing a machine that makes ice cream cones. Yeah, if it hadn't been for him, we'd have a seriously malnourished president. Might be a good thing. And on this day in 1949, actor Don Johnson was born. Probably best known for his role in Miami Vice on TV back in the 80s. Rumor has it that by the time he was three, he already had 5 o'clock shadow. You gotta love Tulsi Gabbard. If you've been catching any of her appearances on the Fox News Channel, she speaks very candidly, very honestly. And she recently said she would be open to having a conversation with Donald Trump about potentially being his running mate. I'll tell you this much, Trump could do a lot worse. Now, Tulsi is 42 years old. She's a combat veteran. Brilliant lady. And you know, she broke with the Democrat Party. She's a former Democrat, and she makes that pretty well known. She doesn't even have to come out and say it. You can tell just by listening to her that she's definitely a former Democrat. She made an appearance on Fox News Hannity and admitted her secret ambition to be Trump's running mate in the 2024 presidential election. Now, the conversation started when Hannity asked Gabbard about the uproar over UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's remark that a man is a man, a woman is a woman. And Gabbard said it was irritating to see that a statement like that could be controversial, adding that it was evidence of how crazy society has become. And she said, it's amazing that this is the time we live in when such a statement is believed to be controversial by some and an act of courage by others. And then Hannity pivoted and asked Gabbard about the 2024 presidential election and whether she had an interest in possibly being Trump's running mate. He asked, last question, this came up. If Donald Trump, for example, wins the nomination, he has a pretty sizable lead, and make a call and say, Tulsi, I want you to run with me, what would you say? And she just kind of coyly smiled at the question and replied very confidently, I look forward to having that conversation. So Hannity then asked Gabbard to elaborate on some of the things she would want to consider before saying yes to the proposition. And she said, I want to be in a position, and this is very important, I want you to hear what she had to say. She said, I want to be in a position to help protect our country's freedom and to prevent us from getting into yet another catastrophic war. I don't just want to be a picture on the wall. I don't want to be somebody who just cuts ribbons. Great statement. Now, before I go further, because I'm going to bring Greg Gutfeld into this equation, I want to play for you a soundbite that I played for you about 2 weeks ago. I think it was like 12 days ago, something like that. And this is when Tulsi appeared on Laura Ingraham's program on the Fox News Channel. Now, Laura had torn into this guy, Robert Kagan. Kagan is pretty much described as a neoconservative scholar. He's a critic of U.S. foreign policy, but don't take that to mean that he's against foreign involvements. He's very much for foreign involvement. And he went to Yale, went to Harvard, went to American University. He's got these PhDs, these BAs, these MPPs, and, you know, he's got all these alphabet soup initials behind his name. But when it comes to what's good for America, Robert Kagan is pretty much just a jughead. So he, about 2 weeks ago, a little over 2 weeks ago, had an op-ed. I can't remember what newspaper it was. I think it was in the New York Times. He had a very lengthy op-ed in which he was alleging that Donald Trump was going to be a dictator and that Donald Trump was going to be a modern-day Adolf Hitler.
Tulsi, like, I used to have Robert Kagan on my old radio show at the beginning of the Iraq War, and he's not a dumb person, he's a smart person. But how ironic is it that they're the ones who push legislation like the Patriot Act that gave the government a way to infringe on our civil liberties, and they're saying that Trump is the dictator in waiting here?
Yeah, Laura, the irony doesn't stop there. The things that he outlined in his incredibly long and difficult to read op-ed, along with things that Liz Cheney are saying, they're warning us of Trump's reelection being a dictatorship, and where he will do all of these things like turn the Department of Justice against political opponents, use the IRS to go after those who oppose his agenda. The list goes on. The thing is, that's exactly what the Biden-Harris administration is doing against President Donald Trump and against those they view as their political opponents. But the thing that really bothered me the most about Kagan's op-ed and many others who continue to warn the country that Donald Trump is going to be like a modern-day Hitler is that they are also the kinds of people who, and we hear this all the time, people say, gosh, if back in the day, if only one person had the courage to stop Hitler, to take him out right before he rose to power, then we would have saved millions of lives. Well, this is what they're essentially, this is a message
they're inviting.
They're sending
violence. Tulsi,
right,
you're saying they're inviting
actor,
someone to take
yes,
a shot at Trump.
This is what is so dangerous,
right,
is they're sending a message to a rogue actor, a lone wolf, saying, hey, we need someone to save our country from this modern-day Hitler-like person. And that is what should alarm every single American. This is not how the United States of America is. This is not who we are. And yet this is what these people in positions of power are doing in abusing their power and undermining our democracy, because in their minds, the end justifies the means.
I am terrified for our country right now, given that type of rhetoric. I mean, unlike
yes,
the left, we don't believe in censoring people's speech. But by doing what they're doing and saying what they're saying, they talk about dog whistles. That's a dog whistle to violence.
If
Hitler is in the way, isn't waiting, then you've got to stop Hitler. Hitler can't, you know. So they know what they're doing, Tulsi. And I think they can't win on the issues. It's obvious they're not winning on any of the issues. So this is where they are. Do you anticipate violence in the streets this coming election year, given where they're going?
Well, this is what I'm so concerned about, Laura, is exactly what we're talking about here and why it's so incumbent upon us as Americans, not Democrats, independents, Republicans, but for us as Americans to take to heart the stand that we need to take to tell these people. And it's not just the establishment Democrats. It is them. But it is also these neocons like Liz Cheney and Robert Kagan who are fanning these flames that could push us to that point. Absolutely. And we need to tell them we will not stand for it and we will not fall for it.
Very honest. And I would argue that Tulsi can say this because she's not aligned with either of the two political parties these days. I think it would be very rough for somebody who was either a Democrat or a Republican to say what Tulsi just said there. So that's why I wanted to play that soundbite for you again. Interestingly enough, Greg Gutfeld over on Fox made headlines recently when he predicted that Trump would pick Gabbard as his running mate. This was during a segment on The Five. Gutfeld and the co-host discussed Gabbard leaving the Democrat Party. And Gutfeld spoke highly of Gabbard, saying she's the definition of an individual. And then he predicted that she'd be Trump's running mate in 24. So quoting Gutfeld, I'm going to read from a transcript here. The thing I like about Tulsi is that if she were to give you two opinions, you couldn't predict a third. She's a definition of an individual. Like, I disagree with her on probably at least 30, maybe 40% of things, but the boxes she ticks aren't the boxes that Kamala ticks. Her boxes are achievements and ideas. That's different than skin color and where she was born. Not where she was born, but whether whatever her background is. So I think that's what makes her so different. I've never seen her angry in my life. And just lastly, I think she's going to be Trump's VP. That's where this is going. And then he continued. He said, but I do think when she said the anti-white racism, she said something most people can't say. That takes serious stones to say that, because it's true. I mean, in the Democrat Party, they make it really clear that, you know, you can be racist against white people because they have it coming. And I think that's why everybody's so desperately identifying as something else. No, no, I'm not white. Everybody's finding something else to be. So that's why you come to the Republican Party or you become an independent. Then you can be who you are. You don't have to pretend. Now, just like Tulsi Gabbard, Gutfeld was right on the money with that. Now, Trump recently indicated that he doesn't see much potential for a running mate among the current crop of Republican candidates. And in my mind, that just strengthens my support for Donald Trump. Now, during a recent speech in Michigan, Trump referred to the GOP candidates congregated in California for that second Republican primary debate as all job candidates. He said, they'll do anything, secretary of something. They'll even say VP. Has anyone seen a VP in that group? I don't think so. Stephen Chung, a spokesman for the Trump campaign, said that Trump was very clear in his remarks, but didn't directly address whether the former president is excluding all seven candidates from the debate. However, one name, and you want to remember this, and we've mentioned this before on much of the same broadcast, one name might be very high on his VP list, and that would be South Dakota Republican Governor Kristi Noem. She's awesome. But I think Tulsi would be good, too. Have you noticed over the last couple of days there seems to be a push to support Nikki Haley? Now, I wish I could cite where some of those voices of support have been coming from, but it's kind of interesting. Steve Ducey on Fox and Friends on the Fox News Channel mentioned something about that, well, perhaps it would be wise for Nikki Haley to go ahead and run as a third-party candidate. Of course, the rest of the panel there on the morning show just said, no way, there's no way that could happen. But it seems like, and it may just be my imagination, but I have a good imagination, that the Fox News Channel is advocating for Nikki Haley now. Eh, makes sense. I mean, the way Vivek Ramaswamy ripped into her on that last debate, that was uncomfortable. Never mind that he was right on target. You know, his criticisms of her were right on target. But speaking of targets, he became one. There was a threat against his life like a day or two afterward. Anyhow, Nikki Haley's racking up endorsements from key conservative fundraisers, according to Austin Alonzo, writing in the Epoch Times. And this just ahead of the 24 primaries. She already has solid backing from wealthy donors in Silicon Valley, including those who typically donate to Democrats. And that bothers me. And, of course, she has her network of political action committees, and I'm not sure which side of the political fence all of those are aligned with. But according to Federal Election Commission filings and her campaign's spending ahead of the Iowa caucuses, the former United Nations ambassador, her main political action committee, is SFA Fund, Inc. However, Ms. Haley is also linked to two other super PACs and a 501c4 organization. Now, collectively, the PACs SFA Fund, Inc., Team Stand for America, and Stand for America PAC had a total of about $19.5 million on hand at the end of June, according to FEC records. Now, most of the money was in the SFA fund, which held about $17 million. Those funds had raised $28 million through June, the last time that the FEC required PACs to disclose their fundraising activities. They had to account for all of it. Now, a super PAC is allowed to solicit or make unlimited contributions from individuals, corporations, labor unions, and other political committees, according to the regulatory agency. Now, never mind that Those regulations should be overhauled and cleaned up. It's long overdue, but that's not about to happen, so let's just address reality. SFA Fund is a hybrid PAC. Now this, according to the Federal Elections Committee, or Commission, means that it can solicit and accept unlimited contributions from individuals, corporations, labor unions, and other political committees. It must maintain two bank accounts, one for independent spending on advertisements or voter drives, and another for making direct contributions to federal candidates. Now, Nikki is linked to a nonprofit 501c4 organization, Stand for America, Inc. And according to 2021 IRS records obtained by the Epoch Times, the group's president at the time was Michael Haley. That would be Nikki's husband. Now, Stand for America was registered as a nonprofit by the IRS in 2019, shortly after she left her position as the U.S. ambassador to the UN. And according to the IRS rules, a 501c4 is a social welfare organization. The earnings of a 501c4 group must not inure or enrich any private shareholder or individual. Interesting. A 501c4 social welfare organization can engage in some political activities so long as that it's not primarily, so long as it's not its primary activity. Okay. There. I wasn't sure I'd be able to spit that out. So in 2021, Stand for America, Inc. said that they collected about $8.6 million, spent about $8.5 million, and ended the year with about $2.3 million. So it's 2022 990 filing. That's the form they use with the IRS. Isn't yet publicly available. Now, Stand for America PAC, a traditional political action committee, was formed in January of 21, well ahead of Nikki's February 23 announcement that she was running for president. Now, between January 2021 and December of 22, Stand for America PAC raised about $17.5 million. And during that time period, it sent about $1.7 million back to Stand for America, Inc. It also spent about $5.4 million with Arlington, Virginia consultancy Targeted Victory. That's the name of the company or the organization. Now, additionally, during this period, the Stand for America PAC sent money to the election campaigns of several Republicans. Most notably, it sent $10,000 to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds for Iowa in June 21. And Ms. Reynolds, a Republican, has endorsed and is now campaigning with Ron DeSantis in his bid. So things are kind of interesting here. In 2023, Stand for America PAC raised about $2.3 million through the end of June. It held about $2.2 million. In June 2023, Stand for America PAC sent $1 million to the SFA Fund. So they're sending money from one organization to the next, to the next, to the next. But the one in question here is that 501c4. Team Stand for America, a joint fundraising committee, was founded in November of 22, and they share an address with Stand for America, Inc. It raised about $7 million in the first 6 months of 2023 and sent most of the money to Ms. Haley's principal campaign committee, Nikki Haley for President, Inc., or a committee related to her campaign. And joint fundraising, according to the Federal Election Commission, is an election-related fundraising activity conducted jointly by a political committee and one or more other political committees or unregistered organizations. Team Stand for America, through June, sent about $2 million to Nikki Haley for president, about $1.3 million to Stand for America PAC, and about $770,000 to SFA Fund. And at the end of September, Haley's principal campaign committee had raised about $18.7 million and retained about $11.6 million on hand. So, you know, you scratch your head, you look at all this stuff, and who keeps track of all of this money? Then, there's the case of the largest single donor to SFA Fund. He's a Ukrainian-American billionaire, Jan Koum, or Jan Koum. Now, he gave $5 million to SFA Fund, Inc. between February and June. See, Mr. Coombe is co-founder and former CEO of messaging application WhatsApp. You may even have the WhatsApp on your cell phone. And the application was acquired by Facebook, Inc. in 2014 for $19.3 billion. So Forbes estimates Mr. Coombe's net worth right now is about $15.3 billion. And according to data collected by watchdog group Open Secrets, Mr. Coombe began, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, it's K-A-K-O-U-M. So I'm going to say it's Coombe. Anyway, I began donating to Republican Party causes in 2021. And most of his contributions have gone to the Republican Jewish Coalition Victory Fund and the United Democracy Project. That's the UDP. Now, the UDP, according to FEC records, has sent about $2.5 million to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee between January and June. Then there's Tim Draper, the founder and managing partner of San Mateo, California-based Draper Associates and a member of the wealthy Draper family, gave $1.25 million to SFA Fund in June. Forbes estimates that Mr. Draper's worth is about $1.2 billion. He campaigned in 2018 to split the state of California into six states. You remember that? He's a prolific donor, but not one to splurge on political causes. And he's given to both Republican and Democrat candidates, according to Open Secrets. And his SFA gift was his largest political contribution ever. There are more. I'm not going to run down the laundry list because your ears will glaze over if they haven't already. But just know that Nikki Haley is playing very seriously. And now there are certain media organizations on the right who are appearing to fall in behind her. But the thing that's important here is Donald Trump is way, way out in front of everybody else in the field. Don't forget that. And thanks again to Austin Alonzo at Epic Times for all this information. Because there's no way that I, in a million years, would have the patience to go out there and collect all this, nor do I have the connections to do it. But I wanted to pass this along to you. Most Americans aren't aware of the fact that traditionally Boston has been a very racist city, very racist town. Not just racist, but culturalist. It's got an ugly history in that regard. And now their Democrat mayor has apologized for causing offense with a holiday party invitation that excluded white people. And we're talking about an Asian mayor, an Asian American, Michelle Wu. And she drew criticism back on Wednesday after her aide sent a holiday party invite to all members of the Boston City Council for an, and listen to this, electeds of color holiday party, even though seven of the officials are white. So Wu told reporters on Wednesday that the invite wasn't meant to be sent to white council members who had their invitations rescinded about 15 minutes after the original email was sent. Now, this isn't a simple mistake. This is a gargantuan screw-up. She may have damaged herself politically with this one. She told reporters, "We had individual conversations with everyone so people understand that it was truly just an honest mistake that went out in typing the email field. I think we've all been in a position at one point where an email went out and there was a mistake in the recipient." She says, "It's my intention that we can, again, be a city that lives our values and create space for all kinds of communities to come together." Which I find rather funny because that seems to have been a problem in Boston's history for not just decades, but centuries. Anyhow, according to a local TV station there, WCVB, I think it's a TV station, maybe radio, I don't know. Anyhow, the minority-only party continued as planned on Wednesday, while Wu's office has plans to host a separate event for all elected officials and members of her cabinet on a different day. Now, this is without a doubt racism in its purest form. You have a separate party for people of color. And I'd like to know, do you have a color chart? Do you have a color bar that you can consult before allowing somebody in? Now, Michelle Wu is Boston's first Asian American mayor, and she defended the event, saying, "I've been a part of a group that gathers representing elected officials of color across all different levels of government in Massachusetts, a group that's been in place for more than a decade, and the opportunity to create a space for people to celebrate and rotate who hosts." I'm not buying that. So Wu's aide, Denise Dos Santos, who sent out the invite, tried to smooth things over in a follow-up email prior to the party. Let me read that to you. She says, "I wanted to apologize for my previous email regarding a holiday party for tomorrow. I did send that to everyone by accident, and I apologize if my email may have offended or came across as so. Sorry for any confusion this may have caused." Well, this just actually makes it worse. Right? Because she basically said, "You white people who got this invite disregarded, it wasn't meant for you." Now, the exclusionary invite was criticized Wednesday by one white member of the city council as unfortunate and divisive. However, black city councilor Brian Worrell, that's what they call their councilmen and councilwomen, they call them councilors. And this guy, Brian Worrell, held a different opinion and defended the invitation, of course, suggesting the holiday party was merely a way to represent all kinds of special groups. Oh, so wait a minute. Let me get this straight. If you're non-white, you're special. But if you're white, you're not special. So Fox News Channel, who originated the story, contacted Mayor Wu's office, and I'll bet you wouldn't be overly surprised if I told you they didn't get any comment. Let's slide on into the comedy corner with Steve Hofstetter.
I wanted to tell you a story about the time I went to Japan. I don't like flying. I don't like talking to people on planes. I don't even talk to the flight attendants because they lie to you. The first thing they say is a lie. "Your safety is our number one concern." No, it's not. No, it's not. Our money is your number one concern. If you cared anything about my safety, why is the seat in front of me made of hard plastic 7 inches from my face? Why is that, huh? Pilot pumps the brakes like, duh! Like, is that safe? Pumps the brake. That's a... I don't think that's how that works. Like someone's up there just tailgating the plane. He's got his hazards on, like, go around. Are there even brakes on a plane? I don't even know. Ooh, brakes on a plane, scary movie. So, I try to avoid talking to people when I fly. There's always someone with their kid in my row. And do I have any parents in the crowd? Yeah. For the parents here, I want to make sure you know this. You're not special. And I'm tired of your garbage. Because parents walk around like having a kid makes you special. And that's not true. Raising a good kid, that makes you special. Just having one, raccoons do that constantly. It takes more effort to order a pizza than it does to have a child. Yeah, no one's ever ordered a pizza by accident. When's that ever happened? Just open your door. How'd this pizza get here? Your parents are there like, oh, pepperoni, what a blessing. Now, because I don't have children, people get mad at me when I talk about children. Gentleman came up to me after a show, livid. Said, until you've understood the pressures of having a child, you can't possibly know what it's like to have a child. And that is true. But I've never flown a helicopter. Yet if I saw one in a tree, I could still be like, dude messed up.
Make it a terrific weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?